And welcome in to the Tuesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Tuesday morning. Joe Rex Road, good morning. How are you doing?
Doing okay. Need those championship games to start a little earlier, but doing all right.
We literally have a tweet before the show began, about 30 minutes ago. So shout out to Christopher on Twitter, there to both of us. There has to be some kind of rant today regarding the absolute absurdity of a 9:20 p.m. Eastern time start. Tough for those of us with jobs and kids. I was asleep before tip-off. It's from Christopher on Twitter.
So I will say, at least when it comes down to a title game with someone, a team from the West Coast. So that's 6:20 local in San Diego that this game tipped. I mean, you got to keep that in mind. This is we are a nation of many time zones. But I still feel like 1 hour earlier would be the sweet spot. It'd be 7:20 for us, 8:20 Eastern. You know, you can get, if you're out there and you really care about this game, you can get somewhere by 5:20 if you get off work at 5, right?
You know how you avoid this?
I mean, you may not be able to get somewhere at 5:20.
Well, maybe not. You do what you've done all tournament long and have the first part of the Final Four on Thursday and then national championship Saturday night. That's how you avoid this.
Yeah, I don't hate that. I mean, that's one of those things that it makes sense. It's also like I love the tradition, you know, like going back to being a little kid of like the excitement of even like being able to stay up Monday night to watch the championship game. But, I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, it would make sense logistically.
I don't know. I don't know what the numbers – I'm sure if they thought that was a better idea that they'd do it and that the money would be better. I mean, so I don't know. But it makes more sense to me to do it that way.
And so if you did it that way, so then basically just flip it and keep the women exactly the same thing.
Keep the same.
Friday, Sunday, yeah. Men, Thursday, Saturday. I mean, I'd watch, you know.
I would watch.
Joe, we would watch if it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Yes.
You two would watch it if it came on at 2 a.m.
Like the old the Korean baseball league that was in COVID, the only sporting event that was going on in the world.
Watch some Korean baseball or Australian rules football. It comes on at 3:30 a.m.
Yeah,
you two would be all in for that.
Yeah.
Today kind of sucks though because now we have to wait a whole nother year. I always wake up on Tuesday morning and I'm kind of like, well, that was fun, and now here we are, and
tragic.
We have to wait a whole nother year for this. Best time of year.
I'm just glad you got your annual viewing of one shining moment in. We all know how important this is to you and Joe to get one shining moment in there.
Well, admission, I haven't seen it because as soon as that game was clinched, get night night light was out for me. So I still haven't seen it. I was like, I'll just catch it tomorrow. Was it good?
Yeah, I thought it was fine. I don't think it was one of the best. I mean, I like dissect this. Robbie, I was like, Robbie, I got here early. I got all my stuff done.
She's ready. I'm sitting
here. I'm watching this one shiny moment. I mean, they show Eric Musselman the shirt off. I'm like, yeah, we could have gone without that one.
Okay.
I had a Steve Lehman, friend of the show at the Preds game the other day, tell me that he's fine with coaches being required to wear suits again for no other reason than it's harder for Musselman to take his suit
there you
off
go.
Than his
there
shirt.
You go.
The Musselman rule.
Yeah.
Yes, all of you must wear not just suits with vests,
yes.
too.
Well, it really worked to get that thing off.
Well, and the funny thing is the sideline reporter, you see him whipping off his shirt, and then you see her in the corner waiting to do the postgame interview when they beat Kansas. She's just like kind of waiting in the wings.
I think it was Allie LaForce.
Yeah. Allie LaForce. And then he's just like got his shirt on, and then he's just getting redressed for the interview. I'm like, oh, that's got to be so awkward.
Take your time, Coach.
Yeah, there's a lot of awkwardness around Musselman. Eric. Okay, so he made one shiny moment. That's okay. Well, that's
off to a poor start.
It doesn't sell me on it big time. But I guess
that
still
picture
watch
of you
it.
With the basketballs in there.
Oh, good.
What's that? Oh, is it?
Yeah.
It should be.
It really should be. That should be the lasting image from this tournament. Looking forward to your viewing of one shining moment coming up a little bit later. UConn wins 76-59 last night to cap off an impressive run on their way to the national title. And that's their fifth national title in the last 25 years. We were talking about that yesterday here on the show. Look, most everybody expected UConn to win last night in this game, and there was a stretch of about 11 minutes in the first half where San Diego State couldn't hit the broadside of a barn shooting the basketball, and it was tough to watch. And I actually, at the end of it, and Hurley said this at halftime, too. Like, I thought UConn probably should have been up by more than they actually were at halftime.
Yes.
And they weren't able to take advantage of that. It ultimately didn't end up mattering, and they win 76-59. But what a tournament run by UConn. They were dominant throughout.
Yeah, they were. They're great. It's disappointing. That was not San Diego State's A game. You know, it just wasn't. And they still had it down to five with, you know, about, what, 5-6 minutes left. And it was like, okay. And then UConn just comes out. I think it was Hawkins just hits a three. Yeah, I mean, they just had an answer every time. But it's just too bad because San Diego State, A game, which is basically like don't go 11 minutes without a basket because yeah. There was a lot of good UConn defense in there, and there was a lot of San Diego State saying, let's keep trying to go inside and get our shot blocked. But also, they still had plenty of shots. You got to hit a couple of those shots, yeah. You know? So it's unfortunate that they didn't have their best, but UConn is, when it comes down to it, usually, I mean, it's not like every year after every tournament, it's like, clearly that was the best team that won the national championship. That's not always the case. I still think more often than not, it's one of the, you know, top three, four teams all year that wins it. And this is the case again. You know, I mean, UConn was number one early in the season. They had a bad 3-week stretch. That's a heck of a team, man. That is a really good team. And now, you know, all the – how about the – I did not expect this, but on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, they're talking Mount Rushmore of Blue Bloods. And they
omitted Kentucky.
Jay had UConn on and Kentucky off. For the record, you know, by the way, UConn has more championships now than Kansas, which is shocking.
They do.
Like, think about that. Kansas has 4 championships all time. Kansas. UConn has 5. But I still, to me, it's still Kentucky, Kansas, Duke, Carolina, in my opinion.
I don't think you can play your way in.
Well, Duke did. I mean, you got to remember, Duke, in my childhood, nothing, whatever.
It's UNLV.
Well, yeah, yeah, that was huge. But I mean, like, so Duke is absolutely a new money blue blood. I mean, they're, you know, now you're going back to, I know for you guys, you're going back to the 80s. But like when they got to the, like, 86 Final Four, and by the way, they lost to Louisville and Never Nervous Purvis.
Great pronunciation of Louisville by you. That's
thank
real
you.
Well
I'm getting
done.
Better. I'm getting good better. Gracious. They were totally like a Duke, and I mean, like, they had been an okay program. So you can play your way in. I mean, it's just so weird. You got 15 of these last 25 years, they have not even gotten either not gotten in or not even gotten a second weekend, but they have 5 championships. It's just like there's nothing else that compares to UConn.
It's really weird.
And 3 different coaches.
Well, that right. And even this year, like Elijah Campbell, our buddy, put this out on Twitter last night. They lost 8 conference games. They went 11-8 from New Year's Eve to Selection Sunday. 11-8. And now they've run through this tournament like a hot knife through butter, and they won the national championship.
Yeah. Well, the Big East was good.
You know? Yes, it was.
That's one thing. The Big East was very good. And that's, again, if a team looks awesome against a bunch of different kinds of, you know, a bunch of different teams, styles, and really good teams early, you know, keep that in mind later. I mean, what was their seeding?
They're 4.
3 or 4, yeah.
They were 4?
They're 4 seed.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, a little bit underseeded. But, you know, when you lose that many games, that's what happens.
That's what happens. But, I mean, what a tournament run it was for them. And they take down San Diego State last night, 76-59. And, like you said, I mean, they're such a weird program because they get in the tournament and they win the whole thing. And they'll go through a run and stretch where they're not all that good. And maybe they don't get in the tournament. Well, I don't know if this is going to be something that's a, you know, kind of a launching pad for them to sustain this as they move forward. But like you said, I mean, we talked about this yesterday, and then I saw Orlovsky talking about this on ESPN after our show was over yesterday. Like the men's and women's combined program, it's hard to think of one better than UConn when you just factor in the success.
Yeah, and it's amazing for anybody who's ever been to Storrs. You ever been to Storrs, Connecticut?
I have not.
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah, it's not too far from where I'm from.
I mean, it's like a freaking hour in like the woods, and then you're like, yeah. Oh, it's a college here. Okay, interesting.
Very like random.
Sounds yeah. Kind of fun.
I mean, it's pretty amazing to think that that's the, you know, that's the center of the basketball universe. But basically, that's what it is.
Well, I just every time this happens and this tournament is over with, I always think back to a night in I think it was 2012 when Kentucky won the whole thing and I logged onto a very early Twitter app at the time and somehow got access to the Lexington police scanner. And it was one of the greatest nights of my life, listening to all the absurdity unfold until about 4 in the morning.
Well, that's funny because I just saw, and this is where Twitter still has value, some kids in stores battering, ramming open some department store last night.
So, great.
That's awesome. Let's not do that.
Yeah. Hopefully no one got hurt.
I think in the Lexington example, it was just a lot of people burning mattresses for some reason. So that's what they did after they won the national
title. Fun fact, when we made it to the Elite Eight one year, somebody's car got burned, and then he became, because you're not supposed to park on the streets, you get notices, hey, March Madness, move your cars off the streets.
It's wild.
Because they're not safe. So this kid, his car got destroyed, and then a local car dealership was like, oh my God, that's awesome. So they put his destroyed car in the front of their car dealership with a UK flag and gave him a brand new car.
Wow.
Different place up there.
See, that's...
They're like, yes, basketball.
That would make me want to leave my car out.
Yeah, right?
Your car's a little bit messed up. Just leave it out there and hope you...
He was a diamond in the rough, though.
It'll be great. We got a lot to get to on the program here today. We will have David Beauclair coming up at 6:30. We'll get into some Titans and Preds discussion with him. Looking forward to that. Cameron Wolf from the NFL Network joining us at 8 o'clock. And Predators General Manager David Poyle joining the show at 8:30 for his weekly visit as well. Speaking of the Predators, they were in action last night in Dallas, and it did not go overly well for the Nashville Predators last night. We will get into that. And look ahead to the quick turnaround tonight as they take on Vegas at home. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Under 5 minutes to go. Sagan from Robertson has the puck.
We have a Cal stoppage. Foote just sniped that. Put it under
yes,
the bar.
Cal Foote.
Absolute rocket. Quick wrister to make it 5-1.
So 15-10 gone in the period, and the Predators on the board.
That would be all she wrote for the Nashville Predators last night. A late goal by Cal Foote to make the 5-0 Dallas Stars lead. 5-1 last night, and that was the final score. Dallas wins 5-1. And the Predators fall in their first game of four important ones this week. They'll take on Vegas tonight, Carolina on Thursday, and then Winnipeg on Saturday. We'll look ahead coming up here in just a few minutes. But not a great one from the Predators last night, Joe. It was actually in the first period. So Dallas scores quickly, and the Predators challenge it, and they win the challenge for an offside. And I'm like, here we go. Look at them. They're just hanging around in there. Dallas ends up taking the 1-0 lead anyway.
Quickly got an actual goal.
They quickly got an actual goal that counted. But, I mean, it's after the first period. I think it was 1-0 Dallas, and the shots were like 10-10 or something like that. And you're like, okay, well, they hung in there, okay, and just hang around, see if you can find a way to get a point or two out of this and then move on to Vegas. And then, you know, Jason Robertson and Roope Hintz and those guys, I mean, they're too much for the Predators last night. And those guys have played really well all year. Jason Robertson became – the first Dallas Star in history, it was since they've been to Dallas, to reach 100 points, and he did that last night, which is kind of amazing that Mike Modano never did that in Dallas.
Yeah,
but
right?
There you go. Jason Robertson did it last night. And, I mean, bottom line was, I think last night, number one, you're going to get some of this from a young team. They look great one day, and then the other day, maybe not so much. Now, I will say, there's a pretty dramatic difference right now between the St. Louis Blues and the Dallas Stars, and I think you saw that firsthand last night too. But I guess the thing that really stood out to me last night as I'm watching that game, Joe, is the size and speed of the Stars. Preds didn't really have an answer for that. Like, winning some of those puck battles in the corner or winning some of the puck battles behind the net, Stars were winning pretty much all of those. And I'm not saying it was like lack of effort or anything from the Predators. It's just when we talk about guys like Tomasino and Evangelista and Novak and some of these other guys maybe getting a little bigger, that's a pretty good example of why.
Yeah, it at times looked a bit like a really good NHL team against, you know, a really good AHL team.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of what it is. But the McCarron line, you know, I actually liked how those guys were playing. You know, I think Dan Hynote, during one of the little interviews, you know, during the period with Kara Hammer, was like, you know, if everybody would play like them right now.
That's what we got to do.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a lot of you can say you're just going to play downhill straight line, you know, but when you're playing a team like that, it's a lot easier said than done. So it ended up being kind of a mismatch. By the way, has someone has picked foot, right, at one point?
I think at some point that someone did happen at picked some point. Foot.
Yeah. Because I was sitting there last night like, yep, I should have gone zero. Should have gone nothing.
It was close.
And then I would have been really upset when foot scored. So
let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Bob from Antioch. Bob, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, guys. I don't think the Predators are going to make the playoffs. I don't think any of us do, but I'd like to know, moving forward, what do you guys think have been some really positive signs the team isn't going to crash as much as we thought it would?
Hey, thanks for the call, Bob. I think there have been a lot of positive signs. Like I think, you know, we discussed some of them yesterday. Like I think Luke Evangelista is going to be really good. Like, to me, we're going to get into a discussion at some point in the offseason of, all right, well, who's going to be here next year and who's not going to be, and where exactly do some of these young guys fit in? Like, all the young guys playing right now, not all of them are going to be on the opening night roster. There's just not room. So you're going to have to make some decisions if you're Barry Trotz and John Hines and whatever goes into that decision-making process throughout the offseason. I'm sure that there'll be some moves that the Predators continue to make. I'm sure that they'll look around in free agency and look around via trade. They've got a lot of cap space and a lot of weapons at their disposal to do that right now. But, you know, positive sign-wise, like, I think Evangelista has been really good. I've been pretty impressed with Tomasino for the most part. Like, I still think he's got to get a little bit bigger too, but he's scoring and he's being productive and he's getting some chances every game. So those two guys in particular to me have been pretty positive. And we talked yesterday about Novak. I mean, it's hard not to be impressed with what he's done to this point. So yeah, and like, to me, Novak's on the team. Glass on the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just – I mean, one of my big questions is, what is the – is it, you know, use some of what you have acquired here to leverage some things and really try to, like, put – a strong team on the ice next year? Or is next year kind of a, okay, let's really see what we have, let's hold off on some things, you know, and kind of let things play out with a younger team?
Honestly, that's kind of the way I'd like to see it go. Now, I don't know if all Predators fans agree with that, but I'd kind of like to see them just let the young guys take the wheel for a minute and just see how it goes, and then maybe next off season is the time to strike with the cap space and everything else that you've kind of accumulated here. I don't know how they're going to handle that. You can go, if a move presents itself to you that you got to do this offseason, then just go ahead and do it. But I'm just saying, like, I don't know that I would be forcing moves this offseason if I were the Preds, just because you've got cap space and these assets now at your disposal. Like, I think I want to see what Parsonen looks like in the top six. I want to see if Evangelista is ready for a full year of NHL hockey. Like, I want to see what Tomasino looks like the full year of hockey. And, you know, I'm not saying you can't do those things if you go out and find other people, but I would just like to see what it looks like. That's me.
Yeah. But, of course, there's also the awkwardness of, by the way, Duchesne and Johansson are still here and under contract, which I fully expect. I saw somebody on the text line yesterday. It might have been, Jason Michelle, but asked about, like, well, moving on from Duchesne. I'm like, yeah, well, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about moving on from Duchesne or Johansson, but that you can't do it. So,
I mean, the only way is what you've brought up is a buyout. Like, that's, and you're not buying out both of them. I mean, that's not happening. No. So
at least one of them is going to be here. But, you know, also Forsberg will be here. So that's good. He's a good player.
He's a good player. Yossi will be here. I mean, the real question right now, like, For the first time that I can remember, like, the forward pipeline right now for the Predators is way stronger than the defenseman pipeline, like, way stronger. And we had David Poile on our show a few weeks ago say, if he had, you know, if things fell correctly, I mean, they'll take the best player available in the draft, but he would really like for that best player available with their first pick to be a defenseman. I mean, he just came right out and said it. And I agree. Like, they got to find somebody that can play back there. So, like, right now I'm looking at it. I know Cal Foote scored last night. You know, quite honestly, I've not been overly impressed with Cal Foote and what he's done to this point. There's the Fabro situation that, you know, he's looked okay lately, but he's signed a one-year deal. Next year's kind of a prove-it year for him. what are you doing with Carrier? He's a restricted free agent, and he's basically been hurt for half the year. And then you've got Yossi and McDonough coming back too. Like, right now, defenseman is the spot where I'm like, I don't really know exactly what that's going to look like next year.
Very weird.
It's very weird.
Very weird to be having that discussion on this franchise.
It is, and then, you know, I would assume – well, I shouldn't say that. Like, how do Trotz and Poile, as they get into the offseason – because I agree with Bob. Like, the numbers are going to be really – it's going to be really hard to make the playoffs work. Like, if you're the Predators, you basically – in my opinion, you got to win the next two to set yourself up for Saturday against Winnipeg and then Calgary right after that. Like, it's just a really difficult – path that they've got in front of him. We'll see how they respond to it and all that stuff. But the likelihood is they're not going to make the playoffs. So if you're Poile and you're Trotz, you basically started the sell-off at the deadline and bought in pretty heavily to the sell-off. Are you done with it? Or is more of that coming this summer? Like, that's also part of the question, too, is we've talked about the cap space that they created and the assets, but, like, Are they going to sell more once the summer rolls around? Are they going to seriously entertain the Soros part of this conversation? I kind of think not right now, but who knows? Maybe they will.
I think you have to trade a goalie at some point.
I do. Yeah, I agree. Like, is that going to be now? Is that going to be next year?
McDonough's interesting, too, because McDonough, I think, you know, anybody in that room probably really likes what he brings.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you could – if it is more of the season you're advocating for next year, I could see him also kind of being like, yeah, you know, can you move me over here or there where the team that actually has a chance to go do something next year?
Like, I think with him, both things can be true at the same time. Like, I think he is professional enough to realize that if he's going to be here, he's going to be the best leader he can be. He's going to do all the right things. He's not going to whine. He's not going to complain. He's just going to do it. And you can have that approach while also in the offseason being like, hey, man, yeah, I don't know about this. Why don't you just send me somewhere else? Like, if you're going to keep me, okay, I'll do what I can do, but I'd like to go play somewhere else. And maybe he doesn't want that. I have no idea. That just logically me following that thought process has kind of always ended up back there as to something he may want, but we'll see. And then there's the contract part that if he does want that, you got to get somebody to take that contract.
Yeah, right, sure, yeah. No, a lot of – interesting questions, and yeah, I feel like right now you probably have to be open to different paths, just like the Titans have to be ready to strike if certain things fall a certain way in the draft. You know, I mean, like, I mean, some of this is like what kind of opportunities will present themselves, you know, to make moves this offseason.
But bottom line is, like, you know, Evangelista has come up and he's played better than I thought he would at this point in the NHL. Like, Novak doing what he's done has been really good. Tomasino's been good. Cody Glass has been good. So there are encouraging things, I think, to build on as they move forward here. We'll get into that and some of the Titans news and notes this offseason as well coming up next with our good friend David Beauclair. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning. And we go to our 102.5, The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend David Beauclair. David, good morning. How are you?
Oh, fine. Good morning to you, gentlemen. I am doing great.
We appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. David, we were just talking about the Preds. Obviously, things didn't go well last night in Dallas, but the youth movement that they've had and Barry Trotz coming in as general manager, and Barry Trotz is somebody that you know very well. What do you make of the job in front of Barry Trotz and his transition from a Hall of Fame head coach to now a general manager? What do you make of this move for Trotz and what you think it'll look like for the Predators?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, during the broadcast of last night's game, the crew did a graph, put up a graphic and talked about kind of UC Soros's Vezina Trophy chances, and they did it with a stat that showed that he has made a whopping number of more saves on shots from the slot than any other goalie in the league this year, which says a lot about Soros and how good he is and how good he is on tough shots and whatnot, which is great. But I looked at that number and I thought, well, that just shows how poorly the Predators have protected the dangerous area of their defensive end this year. And if Barry Trotz was coaching next season, I have no doubt that aspect of their game would be cleaned up, because Barry Trotz is a master at defensive zone coverage and that sort of thing. You know, how he is going to impact that, because it's a clear area of need as the general manager, is a little harder to determine. You know, one thing that I think that you see already where this team is trending a little bit, you know, you pick up a Cal Foot who is 6'5", 224 pounds. You know, last year they added Jeremy Lauzon, who's got decent size to him. He plays a tougher sort of game, does what he can to that end. I think that's what you're going to start to see is maybe some more bigger bodies on defense and guys who are going to stay at home a little bit more and clean up that area or keep it clean for UC Soros, because that's something that has to change for this team.
Do you think the adjustment to that more tighter, style of play, or just more sound, would also involve a coaching change?
It's a really, really good question, Joe. Barry Trotz didn't have a lot of different assistants throughout his time here, or even throughout his time with Washington and the Islanders. And the one guy you would say, well, if he wanted his guy to be here, that would be Lane Lambert, who's got a head job with the Islanders right now. So, how he views John Hines and the job he's done is hard to say. I mean, there's no doubt this team is still playing for John Hines, and that always says a little something. Is it just that these are young kids largely and they're excited and they're doing their thing? I have no idea how that's going to go. My sense is that Barry would want to shake this up and put his own people in place, but that's just sort of a gut feel. There's nothing either way that I have seen or heard that tells me this. He's leaning in this direction as far as John Hines' future.
David Beauclair with us here on Robbie and Rex Row. David, switching gears to the Titans. There's some reporting out there and some rumors out there that maybe the Titans could be interested in moving up to the number 3 pick that is currently occupied by the Arizona Cardinals. Obviously, like, if it's following my logic, that probably means that one of Anthony Richardson or Will Levis are available at the quarterback, and that the Titans would end up with one of those two. But regardless of who it is, what do you make of the idea of the Titans moving up potentially to number 3?
Well, I mean, I guess it's clear that at this point you're not doing any mock drafts in pen or even crayon, right?
Yes.
I mean, everything is pencil and erasable at this point. It's an interesting thought. I think it's becoming more and more clear that this team is looking at the quarterbacks and is interested in one or more of these quarterbacks and not willing to wait until Ryan Tannehill plays out his quarterback to settle on that, the future at that position. So, can they get one of these guys? Is there one of these guys that you're in love with? I mean, this is the one thing you always hear from NFL personnel people. If there is a quarterback that you love, you need to go out and get him. It wouldn't surprise me at this point. I was on with Chase, one day last week, and we were talking about this, and I feel like it's been sort of a low simmer of an off season so far for the Titans. You know, not not huge moves in free agency, but they got a little bit done. I feel like the next 3 weeks leading into the draft, Rand Carthen's going to start making some moves, whether that's to trade Ryan Tannehill or what it turns out being exactly. I don't know, but it just feels like he's not going to sit around and just wait for the draft and see what he can get out of that. I think the real excitement, if you will, of this offseason is coming here in the next couple weeks for this team.
Is there a quarterback you love, David, in this draft?
Well, you know, it's hard not to like Bryce Young and you know, all the things he did. You know, the Alabama quarterbacks of the last few years are a lot different from the Greg McElroy, AJ McCarron era, if you will. So I do like him. I don't think Hendon Hooker gets enough love in this conversation either. You know, I know the knee injury, people are, you know, has probably set him back a little bit, but you look at his accuracy, you look at his touchdown to interception ratio, and he did it in two different offenses with different head coaches and whatnot. That, you know, that says to me that that's a guy who deserves to be in the mix a lot more than I think people are saying in general as well. So I think he's going to get up there and surprise people. And maybe the guy who shakes up the first round of this draft by going to the spot where maybe people aren't really looking at him right now.
David, everybody assumes that the Titans and Jeffrey Simmons are going to get the deal done. And, you know, I'm operating under that assumption as well. Now, I will say, I just assumed before the draft last year that the Titans would get a deal done with A.J. Brown, too, and we saw how that worked out. So what do you make of the Jeffrey Simmons situation and what that means for this franchise and for Rand Carthon that they've got in front of them right now?
Well, I think based on what happened with A.J. Brown, and that's certainly no fault of Rand Carthon, but it does put a lot more pressure on him to get this deal done. You know, the 2019 draft class was so good to the Titans, and if you come out of this with nobody from that group on a second contract, particularly your first round pick and the best player from that group, it's you know, that would be a bit of a catastrophe. The thing with Jeffrey Simmons is, you know, Jeffrey's a guy who's emotional and he's similar to A.J. Brown in that way, in that he sort of just can't sit back and let things happen. And you know, every time he gets asked about it now, you know, you sort of get the sense that he's taking this a little hard and he's uncomfortable with the business side of this. There was the sort of the odd tweet from his representative last week where, you know, you didn't know quite what to make of that. I think
impressive video editing, but they put together though.
Yeah, exactly. I think Jeffrey Simmons is just impatient to the point that it's counterproductive in his own mind. I don't think it's anything that's hurting the discussions. I don't think it's just one of those things. It's just one of these things that it takes time to get these deals done, and quite honestly, it's not the Titans' top priority right now. I mean, the Titans' top priority is the draft and possibly making moves to get more draft picks or move around in the first round or whatever it is they're trying to do. That is, you know, that is job number one right now, and I'm still confident that they'll get this thing with Simmons. I mean, let's face it, you know, as hard as it looks like it's going to be to get another A.J. Brown, there's a lot of good young wide receivers coming into the league every year. And there is, you know, you can be reasonably optimistic that you're going to get something close to him again at some point. Finding another Jeffrey Simmons is, I mean, those guys just don't come along very often. You have to get this deal done.
Can't believe you're going to disrespect A.J. Brown like that, but you know, that's fine. I got to ask you about this O-line, David. Do you feel like the moves made have reasonably fixed it? I mean, I know they're not done, but have reasonably right. fixed the spots that they have addressed so far?
So far, yes, reasonably, I guess. You know, I'm one of these guys, though, like you look at a guy like Brunskill, right? And all you keep hearing about Daniel Brunskill is he's so versatile, can play any position and whatnot. Well, you know what? You need a right guard. You know, is Daniel Brunskill a right guard or not? And that's to me, is a big question. Like, I mean, if you need a right guard, get a guy who has played right guard and has been really good at right guard. And I know that's what he did in a rotational basis last year and whatnot. And I guess I didn't watch the 49ers enough to understand what they were doing with their offensive line to see how a guy who was not a starter still played more than half their snaps on offense. But Dillard, you know, okay. They've talked about the same sort of thing with Dillard. Like, yeah, we think he's our left tackle, but if he's not, he's versatile. You know, I mean, that's what we've heard with Dylan Radins the last couple of years. You want to believe that Dillard is better than Radins, but is he going to be a suitable replacement for a healthy Taylor Lewan? I mean, that's the standard. Yes, last year was Dennis Daly, but what you're really looking for is a guy who can play at or close to the level Taylor Lewan was playing at. Is Dillard a guy who's going to do that for you? I don't know. It's tough to say that if you're a first round draft pick and you couldn't be a starter in 4 years for the team that picked you, that you're going to be that guy. But you know, this is his opportunity to prove it. Reasonably well, Joe. I might stop just short of reasonably well. I think there's still questions there, but they certainly have bodies, so that's a start.
David Beauclair with us here on Robbie and Rexro. David, great stuff as always. Really appreciate you taking time to join us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, boys. Thanks for having me. We'll see.
Thanks, absolutely, buddy. David Beauclair, our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Lots of interesting things that David said there. We'll react to some of those next. This is Robbie and Rexro, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Make sure you join 1025 The Game for the second annual Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament benefiting Souls for Souls, coming up on June the 7th at Hermitage Golf Course. You could put your team together and come play with athletes, musicians, and other local celebs to support a great cause and have loads of fun. Plus, you'll have the chance to win awesome prizes as well. You can sign up to play, sponsor, or donate at thegamenashville.com/golf. Robbie and Rex Road here with you on this Tuesday morning. Thanks to David Beauclair for joining us in the last segment. And some interesting comments by David there, particularly, you know, I heard him talking about this with Chase last week too, when he was discussing the next few weeks here for the Titans, about how like the off season to this point has been maybe a slow build up as for what's to come in the next few weeks here leading up to the draft. Now, I don't know exactly what David's got in mind there and what moves could be coming for the Titans, but maybe it is as simple as, hey, they're about to move up to number 3 in the draft and take a quarterback at some point. What do you make of his idea that maybe some big moves are coming for the Tennessee Titans?
I can see that. It's been very quiet and very
methodical.
Yeah, economical, methodical. There you go. So, yeah, I could see that. I could also see maybe not happening and just continuing to just sort of, you know, just kind of get to the draft and see what you can do to improve your roster in the draft and see what you have next year. It could be that. But I think one of those moves would be one of those potential hypothetical moves would be the receiver trade.
Yep.
And I think that's certainly just when you look at this roster, again, just go back to that position group and tell me how you're going to win games, influence defenses, threaten defenses with Treylon Burks and some other guys, which is what you have right now. Yeah, and certainly you're going to address it in the draft, but I think if all things end up pointing toward best possible team you can have on the field in 2023, you're drafting for next year, you know, next year and beyond, but you're drafting for, you're not drafting the quarterback and punting, you know, on the short term, then I just, man, I feel like you have to try to make a trade at receiver. I mean, you can try to sign. I mean, who the heck is still out there floating around? I mean, it's, you know, get another veteran. But there's nobody that's really going to move the needle that way.
No.
So that would be my big thing. Now, like Beauclair said, could it be deciding to move on from Tannehill or whatever it is? Could be.
Where's he, like the trade part of it for Tannehill? Like, where's he going?
Yeah,
now?
That's kind of dried up. You know, a few weeks ago, we could talk about that.
I mean, I guess if somebody signs Lamar to a contract and the Ravens feel like they need a quarterback, then maybe. But
yeah.
Like Atlanta.
Maybe. I mean, look, I assume at some point this Rodgers-Jets deal is going to happen, I think.
Yeah.
I guess that's going to happen at some point. The Atlanta part of this is interesting, like Michelle brought up there, because I think Lamar Jackson would be really interesting there. They apparently are all in on Desmond Ridder, according to what Arthur Smith has said. Now, is he just saying that, or are they actually all in on Desmond Ridder? But, like, I look around the league right now, and if you were going to trade Tannehill, I don't know exactly where that would be right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Obviously, Arthur Smith, like Vrabel here with Houston guys, loves taking Titans guys, you know, and guys that he knows that he's worked with, but that's a big move, and it's a big cap hit and all that stuff. So, other than that, yeah, earlier we talked about the Jets. You know, the Jets were a team that, with their roster, you can make the case, bring in a good quarterback, and you got a chance to do something. I mean, their roster, to me, top to bottom, is, for example, better than the Titans' roster.
Agreed.
So, but, yeah, you look around, and it's just – everybody either has their young guy in place or is about to draft their young guy in this draft or has an established, you know, better quarterback than him, right? I mean, I'm going through all the teams right now. You know, like a Seattle is a team that may draft their next guy, but they're good with Geno right now. The Rams are interesting.
Yeah,
but you know, I don't think that's not going to materialize.
Well, even like the Patriots, right? The Patriots, there's a lot of discussion with them about Mac Jones and like, is he any good or not, and what's that going to look like? But number one, I don't think they're pulling the plug on him right now. And number two, if they were, they're not doing that for Ryan Tannehill. Would be my guess. It'd probably be for like they would enter their hat in the Lamar situation or something like that. But I don't know that Tannehill is going to be fit. Like I am at this point. I'm convinced that he's going to be on the roster. Now, that doesn't mean you can't draft a quarterback if you're the Titans, but I'm pretty convinced he's going to be on the roster. Otherwise, if he wasn't, like, why would you have not already made that move if you're the Titans?
Right. Yeah, I mean, right. I mean, I think he will be too. I mean, I think he will be, and I don't think they're going to draft a quarterback. That's how I think it's going to play out, but you know, just imagine if they do draft quarterback, if you're Tannehill. I mean, look, ultimately, you can't really complain. You got a second chance here. You got a nice deal here, all that stuff. But you think about Tannehill, what he did here, and then two straight off seasons where, you know, okay, let's trade away A.J. Brown, and now let's draft your successor a year after spending a third-round pick on a quarterback that could have been a player that helped you.
Right.
So – Here you go, Ryan. Good luck with all that.
If they draft
and
a quarterback.
And also, we don't block for you anymore either. Run for your life.
If they draft a quarterback this year, do you think that Ryan Tannehill will mentor this quarterback?
Oh.
Will we get back into all that?
I hope someone asks him, but like in a joking way.
Oh, he will be asked, and I just can't wait to see what his answer is. It'd be awesome.
Hey, Ryan. Paul Kuharsky here. I got a question for you. About mentoring.
You didn't handle it very well last time. What about this guy? You know, you're going to mentor this guy? Lance, in all capital letters on the text line, says, TFA, Tank for Arch. The elongated tank.
When the heck is Arch coming out? When,
3 years from now.
When will Arch, like, well, when will he play at Texas is my question.
Tank for Arch.
There's got to be something better than Tank for Arch, like Barf for Arch. No, that's not it.
That was strange.
That's not good, no.
One of your better ones.
Nope, sorry.
Cam on the text line says, what about packaging picks for number three and D-Hop from the Arizona Cardinals?
Yeah.
Well, right now, nobody can take D-Hop currently as is. So I don't know if I'm packaging a bunch of picks. Like, maybe it costs you less picks if you're the Titans, if you'll just take D-Hop off their
right,
hands. I don't know.
I mean, seriously. Yeah.
There are reports that if this keeps going this way, that he could just be outright released, and then he's out there and available for everybody. So I don't know. Like,
he seems like the classic, you know, come here and he'll join the pantheon of Titans receivers who used to be great.
I know. Like, look, I've watched that guy eat the Titans lunch time and time and time again, and I get it. I love DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah. He's really good. But is he still that player? I don't know. And I know what the reaction from Titans fans would be. It was like, oh, no, here we go again.
Yeah,
Round four with these receivers.
Yeah, I don't think that's the one. I just think that the downhill, it's steep in front of them right now. I think that's where it's going.
615-737-1025. We'll continue this discussion on the Titans coming up next. We'll also get into the quarterbacks available in the draft. Which quarterbacks out there in the draft do Titans fans actually want? Who would you actually be excited about the Titans drafting? We'll get into all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.